Finally, this hour, is the federal government a useful partner in enforcing and enacting police reforms? Last Friday, the city of Baltimore became the 20th city in the U.S. to sign a consent decree with the federal government, instituting a series of reforms in the city's police department. We spoke with Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh that day about what the city hoped to accomplish.
We are prepared to do what is necessary to make our citizens safe, to make our police department safe, to provide the tools that are necessary and the training that is necessary so that we can have the best police department and the best interaction between community and police going forward.
But it is unclear if under the Trump administration, this consent decree mechanism, which goes back to the 1990s, will be pursued or discarded. Long before the most recent focus on police brutality, before the deaths of Freddie Gray and Michael Brown, or the growth of the Black Lives Matter movement, the city of Pittsburgh came under scrutiny following the 1995 death of a black businessman who died of asphyxiation during a struggle with white police officers in the city's suburbs. Pittsburgh's consent decree expired in 2002, and Cheryl Gay Stolberg, domestic affairs correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, looked at the track record in Pittsburgh and where the whole consent decree idea came from.
A consent decree is simply as it sounds. It's an agreement. It's an agreement between two parties. In this case, John, we're talking about consent decrees to reform police departments. And there's a very specific history to that. The history grows out of the 1991 beating of Rodney King, an unarmed black man in Los Angeles. He was beaten by four LAPD officers. It was captured on video, on very grainy television footage, and it led to widespread outrage across the country, and particularly in Washington, where Congress held hearings on how to address police misconduct. And lawmakers inserted a very tiny provision known as Section 1414 into a crime bill signed into law by President Clinton, and it authorized the Attorney General to investigate and sue to eliminate any pattern or practice, those are important words, pattern or practice of unconstitutional violations of civil rights by law enforcement officers. And when the Attorney General does investigate, these suits lead to consent decrees, agreements between the federal government and cities and their police departments to reform.
So broadly speaking, this is a mechanism for the federal government to have oversight on local law enforcement. What's the track record of actually reforming and doing a good job of what they intended?
So the track record is mixed, and I think experts would say it's gotten better over time. I went to Pittsburgh to look at the very, very first consent decree, which was reached in 1997, and it turned Pittsburgh into a model department, but only for a while. Over time in Pittsburgh, the chief, who was a reformer, got fired. The union balked at the reforms. A new mayor came in. Some of these reforms fell out of use. One of the chiefs, the reform-minded chief's successors, wound up going to prison during a corruption scandal. So the only way to assess that particular consent decree is to say that it didn't stick. But others have been hailed as a success, particularly in Los Angeles. A consent decree was examined by a Harvard study. Harvard called it the most ambitious police reform experiment in America and said it led to widespread reforms. And in other cities like Seattle, which is just coming out of its consent decree, there's been agreement that these reforms have led to real changes.
Within the Justice Department, is there a group that believes that this is a useful mechanism? Is there any way of determining whether, for instance, Jeff Sessions and the lawyers and the legal team around Attorney General Sessions thinks this is a good way of actually enforcing reform within police departments?
Well, when we think about consent decrees, they've actually fallen in use and out of use over time. And you need to think about the philosophical dispute over the shape and size and scope and role of the federal government, because that plays into this debate that we're having over consent decrees. Clinton used them. George W. Bush pretty much abandoned them. The Obama Justice Department really brought them to a high art form. And now, as you mentioned, we're seeing Attorney General Jeff Sessions saying, you know, I don't think this is the way to go. Sessions regards consent decrees as a massive overreach of federal authority. I think as a conservative, he's inclined to believe that The federal government has no business meddling in local police departments. That's actually what George W. Bush believed. He used that word. So within the Justice Department, there are certainly lawyers, you know, line lawyers who believe that these consent decrees can be a very effective reform tool. And many police chiefs believe that they can be a very effective reform tool. But I think the question among conservatives and people like Sessions and Donald Trump is it a tool that we should use? Is it the heavy hand of the federal government intervening where it has no business?
And in general, it would be correct to say that this is a mechanism that has a very partisan record, used almost exclusively by Democrats and not so much at all by Republicans.
Absolutely. And if you think of it as that sort of, you know, the philosophical inclination, right, Democrats tend to be more philosophically inclined to use government as an instrument to advance social change. Republicans tend not to be. So it's the same thing with these consent decrees. Consent decrees are instruments of the courts. So what happens in a consent decree is the parties reach an agreement and then a federal judge steps in to monitor reforms. And these reforms can be very aggressive, and they can require police departments to spend money, for instance, and money that a lot of times cities might say they don't have. Unions don't like them. The police unions don't like them because they say consent decrees are a way to do an end run around a bargaining agreement. They allow chiefs to discipline officers who, you know, might otherwise have more expansive rights under their union contracts. So there's this whole clash around, you know, the philosophy of it, as well as whether or not they're effective. But I think by and large, experts would say they can be very effective.
But just to emphasize that point you made, police view them as very much anti-police.
Many police view them as very much anti-police. Many chiefs are embracing consent decrees. If you look at Baltimore, where there were riots in 2015 over the death of Freddie Gray, a 25-year-old black man, in Baltimore, the then mayor, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, invited the Justice Department in, and the current chief, Commissioner Kevin Davis, is very much in favor of this consent decree. And even in Baltimore, the union actually cooperated with Justice Department investigators in Baltimore. The union is not as keen maybe on this consent decree, but Baltimore is a really good example of how the Justice Department at the very end of the Obama administration kind of figured out a way to bring the parties together and even to bring the police unions, the police union in. Although by and large, unions have not been fans of consent decrees, and unions, the police union backed Donald Trump for that very reason in 2016.
A historical look at the consent decree as a mechanism for enforcing reform in police departments. Cheryl Gay Stolberg is domestic affairs correspondent for our part of the New York Times. Thanks so much, Cheryl.
Thanks, John.